Welcome to the Reset Podcast. I'm Liz Tran, an executive coach to founders and CEOs of fast-growing tech companies, and I attribute my success to my spiritual practices, which are rooted in mindfulness and Zen Buddhism. In this podcast, I combine business advice with spiritual lessons to help you lead a courageous, authentic, and fulfilled life. Hello, podcast people. It's Liz here, and I have a different type of episode today. An amazing listener named Giselle suggests that I talk a little bit about what it's like to go to an ashram, and I wanted to share my experience here because I actually just got back from one, and I'm feeling really, really great. More broadly, I will be sharing about what it's like to go to a meditation retreat, which in some ways is similar to the ashram life. And more generally beyond that, I'll be talking about spiritual getaways in general. I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast are really curious about how they can use their downtime in more, not productive, but more spiritually oriented ways than going on a beach vacation, drinking lots of margaritas. And for those of you who have always had questions about what it's actually like, I am here to give you all the details about what to expect, what I like, which places have really resonated with me, and hopefully inspire you guys to take a self-care, nourishing, spiritually oriented vacation sometime soon. All right, let's start with the most basic question. What exactly is an ashram? These are some of the different dictionary definitions of an ashram. First off, it's a Sanskrit word, and I'm looking here, and it says that an ashram is a secluded dwelling of a Hindu sage. It is also a religious or spiritual retreat. It is the name traditionally given to a Hindu monastery and can be described as a place where a spiritual or religious guru and their disciples live. In short, the way that I've experienced an ashram is it is a spiritual learning community that is also Hindu in origin. The place that I went this weekend for my birthday, I went for 3 nights and 4 days, is called Shivananda, and I will link in the show notes so you can learn more information from the website. So Shivananda is a particular spiritual yoga system that was founded by Vishnu Devananda, and there are about 12, I believe, ashrams all around the world. They have a location in France, one in Vietnam, one in California, a few in India, one in Canada, New York, and this one that's in the Bahamas. I originally found out about Shivananda because I think this was probably 6 years ago. I was looking for a place to go that was public transportation accessible from New York City, and I came across the New York location that's in upstate New York, and I could take a bus there. It was like 2 hours. I really enjoyed my experience and spoke to someone there and said, you really have to go to the one in the Bahamas. It's amazing. The first time I went was in 2020, literally right before New York shut down. And it was such a beautiful experience. I've been meaning to go back, and this was my first time that I was able to go back. So first off, let me set the setting for you. You do not need to have any formal training or any particular expertise in yoga or any sort of affiliation to be able to go to a Shivananda ashram. All that they ask is that you participate in the activities and that you are a vibrant and authentic, interested member of the community there. And at Shivananda, when I was there, there were 3 types of people. The first type were the staff, and they live there. They teach the classes, and they generally have dedicated their lives to Shivananda. Then you have the yoga teacher trainers, and these are people who were doing a teacher training course to be able to teach yoga in the Shivananda discipline. And there were maybe about 30 of them, and they were there for 28 days. And then you had other people like me who are there on what is called, quote unquote, a yoga vacation. And everyone can participate in all the activities. The day starts at 6 a.m. with something called satsang. And that is essentially meditation, prayer, and chanting. You don't have to know any of the chants. They give you these little books so you can sing along with these chants that are in Sanskrit. It's really fun. And then there's a yoga class at 8, the last 2 hours. You have lunch after that. There's another yoga class at 4, the last 2 hours. Then you have dinner. And then after dinner is another satsang. So another hour and a half period of prayer and meditation. Essentially, your day can begin at 6 a.m. with satsang and then could end at 9:30, 10 p.m. with the ending of satsang. I was very, very tired and very burnt out. So I did not make it to satsang at any of the 6 a.m. classes, which was totally fine. A lot of people didn't go to both of the yoga classes and both of the satsangs. It's really up to you what you want to do. I can overhear other people at their tables talking. And for the people who had been there for longer, I mean, there were some people who were there for weeks at a time on the yoga vacation. They were talking about how they pretty much stopped going to satsang in the mornings. This is definitely not something that I would encourage. I think that if you're going to have the experience of staying at an ashram, you should really make the most of it and try to be really open-minded and participate in the whole schedule. And to be really honest, I think you can only really get away with this, not going to every single activity in the Bahamas location because there are so many people there. I think there are probably 100 guests. But when I went to the ashram in upstate New York, I did feel more of a pressure to be at every 6 a.m. satsang and every 8 p.m. satsang, plus the 2 yoga classes, because I think there are only 12 of us there at any given time. When I was in India doing a yoga teacher training, then of course you absolutely had to attend every single thing. So if you're looking for a way to dip your toe into it, to see if it's for you, I highly recommend the Bahamas location. It's great. It's beautiful. It's literally right on the beach, and it's a 2.5-hour flight from New York. A few more just sort of logistical details. Everyone is wearing very comfortable clothing. Lots of people are in yoga pants and t-shirts. When you are in the temple, you do need to dress more modestly. So you have to have your shoulders covered and your knees covered. Food-wise, you eat these very, very simple vegetarian meals. It might be something like eggplant, cabbage, salad, some dal, some rice, and some very plain soup that has lots of vegetables in it. Plus, there's optional bread if you want it, bread with peanut butter, jelly, fruit, and these beautiful, very simple teas of just infused sage, for instance, that I thought were so delicious. So the food is all very, very healthy and very, very pure. And you can tell that it is made with love by the people who work there. So I absolutely love the food. And the rooms are very sparse. Some people are staying in tents. They had these different platforms that had tents that were owned by the ashram where you could stay. I think those were like maybe $70, $60 a night. It's on the website, so you can check. And then the nicest rooms are right on the beach, but even those are very, very simple. Think, you know, twin size bed, small room, shared bathrooms. And this is what I really love about going on spiritual retreats is that you're reminded of how beautiful yet simple life can actually be. In fact, what you realize is that oftentimes the more simple something is, the more beautiful it is. One does not need the most expensive couch or the most luxurious carpet. You can really learn how to be happy anywhere. Of course, this is very easy in the Bahamas because it's just so beautiful naturally. This ashram, Shivananda in the Bahamas, is particularly so lush. There's so much beautiful foliage over 5 acres. So the whole thing is a ton of housing, a ton of buildings, 2 temples, 3 platforms for doing yoga, a little gift shop, but everything is covered in trees and plants, and it's right on the water. So it's just absolutely gorgeous. And you don't really think too much about what your day is because you don't really have a choice. You have a schedule, you eat whatever they have, and you live in the place where you live. And I really love that. For me, living in New York can often give me this feeling that I need more and more and more. I need to be doing more. I need to be promoting myself more. I need to be more visible, or I need to compete with the people around me. And all of that is actually just bullshit. Going to Shivananda just reminds me of what is actually truly important. And that is not the external, but rather the internal spiritual relationship that I have with myself and the world around me. The quality of my life is truly based on the connection that I feel in my own body, with my own spirit, with my own mind, and with the natural world around me, how I treat other people, how I treat this earth. Within minutes of walking onto the campus of Shivananda, I felt so peaceful and so relaxed. It was incredible. I couldn't even believe it. And that night, I slept better than I've slept in weeks, even though I'm very particular and very diligent about trying to make sure that I get good sleep here in New York. I don't eat past 7:30 p.m. because I'm hoping to be asleep by 10:30 p.m. I don't drink water, so I don't have to get up and use the restroom in the middle of the night. I take a melatonin supplement to help with my sleep. And I have a very deep relaxation practice. I try to read, be off my phone by 9 p.m., et cetera, et cetera. And I track my sleep patterns on this very cool little body monitoring gadget called the Oura Ring. I'll also link to that in the show notes. It's O-U-R-A. Every morning it gives you a score, two scores. The first score is your readiness score. And that means how energized and focused you are to tackle the day. The second score is your sleep score. And that's how well you slept across a few different dimensions. And even though I'm pretty meticulous about ensuring that all the right factors are there to get good sleep, I rarely get above an 80 out of 100. My first night I was at Shivananda, I think I got like an 87. It was definitely my highest sleep score ever. And I just felt so good. You're listening to the sound of the ocean. Life is simple. You know, your attention isn't pulled in a million different directions. And for me, I love that stark contrast between what my life is like in New York and what my life is like when I am in the ashram environment. And it's so good. It's so hugely different, but so, so needed. It's like opposite sides of the spectrum. For me, when I'm in this New York grind for too long, I need to go do the opposite. And at this point, I've been to probably a dozen silent meditation retreats. I've had 5 ashram experiences. And these are like a salve to all of my problems and my whole soul. When I start to feel really stressed and anxious and insecure, it just means that I'm totally out of whack. I am spiritually unaligned. And just a quick trip to a meditation retreat or to an ashram gets me totally back tuned up again. So here I was at the Bahamas Shivananda Ashram, and it occurred to me that it had been 10 years since my very, very first ashram experience in India. I was 27 at the time, and now I just turned 37. It's actually more like 9.5 years, but it sounds better when you round up to 10. So just to tell you guys a little bit about that, when I was 27, my partner and I decided to take a year-long travel sabbatical. Part of what we were going to do was to work on a film that he wanted to make. He was a filmmaker. And for whatever reason, I really, really, really wanted to go to India and I wanted to study yoga. That meant that I'd been doing yoga for about 8 or 9 years. I started when I was in college and it was a huge part of my life. I used to go to yoga 3, 4, or 5 times a week. It was something that I felt extremely drawn to. I didn't know if I was going to teach yoga afterwards, but there was this feeling in my heart, this real pull that said, you have to go to India. You have to go to India. you have to go to India. And once I made that decision, everything truly fell into place as if by divine synchronicity. So after about just 5 minutes of Googling, I think I Googled like yoga teacher training, yoga ashram. I think I knew I wanted to be somewhere in Northern India. Maybe I didn't care. I actually can't remember. But honestly, within 5 minutes, I found this place called Samyak Ashram. And I think it was only their first or second time having a yoga teacher training. So they were still priced very, very competitively. And it was the exact dates that I wanted as well. It was a full month-long program. At that point, my partner and I decided to split up, not romantically, but geographically. He was going to go to Thailand. I was going to go to India. And we also decided that in order to give ourselves space to explore the people that we were becoming, we were not going to speak that entire time as a little experiment. So I really went off on my own to India, to a place where no one knew me, no one knew what my job was, what my career was, where I'd come from. And it gave me the opportunity to see myself differently as well, which was so meaningful. That experience, that month at that ashram, and then the few weeks after that that I stayed in India were hands down the most transformative weeks of my entire life. That time in India was the entire base of the person who I have become today, the parts of myself that I am most proud of. And I cannot underscore how valuable that moment was. And I give credit to myself for being able to listen and tune in and say, you know what? I don't need to explain to myself the practicality of why I want to do this. I don't need to justify this to myself. I just feel like I should. And that was not something that I did very easily at the time. I wasn't someone who just did things because I wanted to do them. I didn't feel like I had that privilege in a lot of areas of my life. So it was really out of character for me to go to India and do this thing on my own. I was in a very codependent relationship with my partner at the time. So for us to go and do our separate things was totally insane in the context of our relationship, but it was everything. It freed me. It enabled me to discover who I was outside of my identity as his partner. So I got to Samyak. And what most surprised me was that we weren't just learning about the physical yoga postures. We were also learning about the entire philosophical and spiritual foundation. We read the Bhagavad Gita. We read a lot of different spiritual texts. We learned about different Hindu deities. We chanted what they call kirtan. So we sang, chanted kirtan. We learned prayers. We learned about Ayurveda. And to the credit of our teachers, they did an incredible job of not just teaching us how to be physical yoga teachers. They taught us how to be yogis at our core. And it was one of the hardest physical and emotional things I ever did. We would wake up at 5 or 5:30 every day. This was also during the rainy season. It was the shoulder of monsoon season. It was so wet. It rained every single day. I remember taking all of my clothes out of the drawer at the end of that month, and my backpack and some of my clothing items were actually covered in mold because they hadn't ever seen the sun, and it was so humid in my room because of how much it rained. So imagine this. It rains every day. You're up at 5 o'clock in the morning for 5:30 practice, and then you go until pretty late at night. And you're doing 5 hours of yoga physically with your body. And the rest of the time you are learning. And then on top of that, during your meals, you're having these conversations with these other people, all of whom are also in huge transition moments in their lives. That was what really surprised me too, was that half of the people who were there were going through a breakup or had gone through a breakup or were about to be broken up. And then the other half were going through some sort of job transition, going back to school, retiring, whatever it might be. And I guess that really makes sense because honestly, it's really hard to take a month off from your life to go to India and do a teacher training if you're not in some sort of transition. And there are people from all around the world there, people from all different socioeconomic statuses, some people who are literally 20 years old and some people who are 60 years old, but it did tend to skew younger. It was a lot of young women who were in their 20s, just like me at that time, and people who are trying to figure out who they are and how spirituality was going to fit into that version of themselves. Through my new friends who are doing this program with me, I learned about crystals for the first time. I mean, obviously I knew that crystals existed, but I didn't know how potent and powerful they were. I learned about what the ego is. I learned more about meditation and mindfulness than I'd ever known before. I got deeper into astrology, and I worked with a healer for the very first time in my life. So this was a really expansive experience for me in my spiritual world. I'm going to link in the show notes to Samyak. They're amazing. It's an amazing program. Even though it was 10 years ago, I'm still part of their Facebook group and get their newsletters. They're still doing training. So if you're interested, I can only say the best things about my experience there. I got 10 times better at yoga. I made so much more progress in 1 month than I ever had in the 8 or 9 years I'd been doing it cumulatively. And I think there's something really powerful about having your body do the same thing consistently every day for 5 hours. It is such a hardcore, intensive thing. I mean, people were experiencing lots of soreness. I mean, there are days where I couldn't even walk. Someone hurt their back, but it was definitely brutal. But that was how I learned how to do a headstand, a handstand. I got so much more flexible. And then I really carried that practice with me moving forward. The sequence that I learned there, I did it every day for a year. It took about 1.5 hours to do, and I kept doing it. It's called Ashtanga, and I still do it sometimes, and it's a really powerful part of my life. And I learned so much about love for my physical body through that experience. So if you have ever even thought about it, highly, highly, highly recommend. Oh, and one thing I forgot to say is that when you are part of an ashram, you have to adhere to the rules of living at an ashram. And that includes no meat, no alcohol, no drugs, no cigarettes, no outside visitors, no sex. Some of the women who were part of the ashram with me, they would sneak out on Saturdays and they would eat chicken, be really bad. Or there was one night where a couple people had a glass of wine. I didn't do any of that, but I definitely really wanted to at times. But I also was having such a beautiful time in the spiritual experience that I didn't want to ruin it. Okay, now let's talk about meditation retreats. I love, love, love silent meditation retreats. I think part of this is because I am a quadruple Aquarius, so I actually really like being alone. I like quiet time regardless. For some people, I know it is very challenging for them to be in silence for that long, but that's never really bothered me. I actually really like it. And for everyone I've spoken to, they've all said that even if they have had initial discomfort, then they very quickly adjust and learn to relish in the silence. My favorite meditation retreat is called Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, which is, I think, maybe 4 or 5 hours from New York. And that is the first meditation retreat in the US ever. It was created in the 70s by Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, and Jack Kornfield, who are widely considered some of the first people to bring meditation from the East over to the West. It is truly this majestic place. It has these beautiful columns in the front of it. It just looks very stately. And inside, it's so beautiful. It's on a lot of beautiful green acreage. And it just has the most incredible energy field to it. It feels like you're entering a place of completely immersive peace and calm and tranquility. There's nothing like it. So day to day, it is very similar to the ashram lifestyle where you're up around 5 a.m. and you have continuous spiritual work till about 9 or 10. And again, you're also eating vegetarian as well. And you are meant to uphold the same rules. These rules are based on a part of the Buddha's teachings called the 5 precepts. And those at IMS, Insight Meditation Society, are 1, to practice compassionate action. So you do not harm any living sentient beings. 2, you practice contentment. That means that you don't steal or borrow without consent. and you accept what is offered and do not try to change it or get more. 3, you refrain from misusing sexual energy. 4, you refrain from harmful speech. So you do not gossip, lie, or use harsh or hurtful language. And then lastly, that final precept is to take care of yourself, to refrain from clouding the mind and harming the body through the misuse of alcohol, drugs, and other intoxicants. And then on top of that, you're doing the whole thing in silence, save for a couple of sessions where you are allowed to speak in a small group setting or ask the teacher a question during meditation. And the schedule is essentially nonstop sitting meditation, then walking meditation, sitting meditation, then walking meditation, take a break to eat, more sitting meditation, more walking meditation, take another break to eat, have a Dharma talk, which is a spiritual discussion led by one of the teachers that you're just listening to. And then you do more sitting and walking meditation until ultimately you go to bed. And you are not meant to be on your phone. You're not on your phone at all. You're not on your computer. You're not even supposed to write in a journal or read any books. That's what I do when I'm there. I do not have any sort of distractions or stimulus from where I am in the present moment. This is different from the ashram where I did have my computer and they have Wi-Fi everywhere. The Wi-Fi at the Bahamas ashram is actually really excellent. And something really funny they do there is during the satsangs, they turn off the internet so that people can't sit and watch YouTube in their rooms. They have to go out and actually join and participate in the satsang, which I think is so brilliant. But the mindfulness meditation retreat is very, very hard. It's very, very tough, but it is so healing in the same way, almost even more for me than the ashram is. I actually think it is more powerful because you're spending more of your dedicated time in proactive meditative experiences. Not to say that you don't get a ton of that at the ashram, but the meditation retreat is just really hardcore. If you're thinking about it, then I highly recommend you checking it out and doing maybe a 3 or 4 day weekend one. They have week-long ones. You can even stay for longer. You can stay for over a month, which I would love to do one day. That is such a life goal of mine, to be able to have my work figured out enough and in my control where I could actually take a month off and not have to look at email or my phone. That would just be so, so gorgeous. I can't even explain how much I want that. And what I've really gotten from my experience of going on silent meditation retreats is it has deepened my presence and my love of meditation so much. I have ADHD. I've been diagnosed with ADHD. I don't take medication for it, but practicing meditation and mindfulness has changed my whole life. I can concentrate. I can focus so much better now. I think more highly of myself. I'm more present to my surroundings. I'm more grateful. I'm more appreciative. I don't know the person I would be if I had not discovered Buddhism and meditation retreats. I just probably would be dead, honestly. Because when all of this stuff came into my life, I was really, really struggling. I was getting divorced. I had such low self-esteem from 4 years of being in a very codependent, toxic relationship. I was very confused about my career. I didn't really have any money. And I just remember feeling very suicidal because all I've ever wanted is to experience a family and love. And I really doubted whether or not I was healthy enough or worthy enough or whole enough to ever have that in my life. And I remember a meditation retreat that I went to around this time that was all about self-love and self-compassion. And it totally broke me open. It helped me to see myself in a completely different way. And I definitely didn't leave knowing that I loved myself, but it was a huge step forward from the self-loathing, constant critique of my body, my face, my intelligence that was such a part of my running narrative. And these retreats have taught me so much how my thoughts are not actually in control. They're not real. They are just thoughts that pass like clouds in the sky, and I can watch them and I can appreciate them. I can befriend them or I can just let them go. The other day, my husband said to me, he said, you know, I think a lot of people have quite a bit of anxiety and their thoughts really work against them. He said, you're so rare because I think your thoughts really work with you. They work for you. They're very positive and supportive. It honestly was the opposite of this for much of my life. And I think even now I still have them, but I've learned to just watch them and not give them any credence. And I know that the negative self-critical thoughts, they're there, but I don't have to believe them anymore. And that was the big gift that going on meditation retreats taught me. Another really beautiful thing about a lot of meditation retreats is that they do offer sliding scale. And when I first started getting into them, I didn't have a lot of money and I'd always do sliding scale. And now I choose the option of the benefactor where I pay a lot more so that I can pay for other people to go as well. And I'm so grateful that they offered that at the time because I really needed it. And IMS also has this amazing people of color retreat that I went to in 2016 and I'm going to for just the second time this year, now 6 years later. And I'm so, so excited about going to it. They offer that at Sliding Scale as well. And I just met the most incredible people afterwards on the car ride home. They do carpool from New York City. So no matter your limitations, check it out, see what they have. For those of you who are in California, the sister center is called Spirit Rock. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. And then in New York, obviously there's the Shivananda Ashram in upstate New York. I think they call it the Shivananda Yoga Ranch. There's also Menla, M-E-N-L-A, that I've been to a couple times, not for silent retreats, but spiritual experiences. There's Kripalu in Massachusetts that you can take the train up to. And there is the classic Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, that you can take the train to as well. So those are spiritual retreats. They're not necessarily silent. I myself am a big fan of the silent. That's all I've got for you today. If this was the sign that you needed, then go ahead and plan your spiritual adventure. If that is the intuitive pull that you have been feeling and experiencing, thank you to Giselle for submitting this request. I am definitely looking at your podcast suggestions. So now you can actually DM me if you have a podcast suggestion because I have a new way of organizing them. There's an amazing young woman named Izzy, who's now working with me part-time, who's helping me stay more organized on the social media side because I'm really bad at social media. I rarely check my own DMs, even from my best friends. I'm horrible at it. I'm also really bad at text messages too. But when I do have time and I try to get to them, then what I'm reading from you guys matters to me so much. And it is so, so meaningful, which is why I found Izzy so that she could help me be more attentive towards all of you guys. So even if it's not booking a spiritual retreat, just do something really nice for yourself today. Do something really nice for yourself. That's all I have to say. Finally, as always, remember today to love yourself, to listen to yourself, and to say yes to life so that life can say yes to you. Thank you guys, and I'll talk to you next week.